in the matter of Karina Pia Lucet. Counsel could step forward, please. May we please have appearances?
Charles Centenaro, Director of the Office of Attorney Ethics, on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics.
And Kim Ringler, Ringler Law Firm, on behalf of the respondent, Karina Lucet.
Welcome, counsel. It's a pleasure to have you both.
Thank you.
Mr. Centenaro, please.
Chief Justice Ravner, Associate Justices of the Supreme Court, may it please the court. This matter comes before the court on an order to show cause why Karina Lucet should not be disbarred or otherwise disciplined for knowingly misappropriating client trust and escrow funds in violation of N. Ray Wilson and N. Ray Hollandonner. The facts of this case are largely but not entirely uncontested. On January 21st, 2016, respondent negotiated a settlement on behalf of her client, John Petrelli, with MS Services, a vehicle financing company, whereby Mr. Petrelli agreed to pay $5,500 to the vehicle financing company. 5 days later, on January 16, 2016, respondent issued a trust account check made payable to MS Services in the amount of $5,500 and mailed that check with the expectation that it would be received by MS Services on January 29, 2016, 3 days later.
Could I ask you to try to keep your voice up a little bit, please?
At the time respondent wrote the check, she was holding both client, trust, and escrow funds, but she was holding no funds on behalf of Mr. Petrelli. She knew that she was holding no funds on Mr. Petrelli, on his behalf. She knew that she did not have the authority of the individuals for whom she was holding funds to use their money, but she did it anyway, and in so doing, knowingly misappropriated client, trust, and escrow funds. According to a letter which respondent wrote to the OAE on October 5th, 2017, which was admitted into evidence without objection from respondent's counsel, she wrote, quote, "We sent out the $5,500 on his behalf to settle the account and then asked him to reimburse the trust account. During the hearing in this matter, however, respondent changed her statement and testified that she contacted her client on January 21st and told him to immediately send the monies to cover the settlement. But regardless of whether respondent asked her client to send her the money on January 21st or January 26th, the fact remains that Mr. Petrelli's settlement monies were not in her account at the time she issued the check and mailed it to MS Services. MS Services received the trust account check on January 29th as expected and cashed it. At that time, the respondent still was holding no funds on behalf of Mr. Petrelli. Therefore, other clients' trust funds and escrow funds were invaded.
Can I ask you a very technical question?
Yes, sir.
Is it your position as soon as the check is issued, but before it's cashed, the money is no longer in the trust account?
Yes.
Even if it's not cashed? So long as the attorney issues the check, even if it's never cashed, the money is no longer in the trust account?
That's when you need to determine whether there's an intent to misappropriate. So if an attorney has monies in the account, the attorney knows that that money is not his or hers, and writes a check for a certain amount of money with the intent of using it, but that check, before the check is cashed, the attorney receives money on his or her behalf, and that check is deposited, there would be no knowing misappropriation.
Right. So that's the thing I just wanted to clear right. in my head. So had Ms. Lucet issued the check, and before it was cashed, money had come in from the client and placed in the trust account, and then it was cashed, you wouldn't be here today, would you? Despite the fact that she issued the check before she had received money, or would you? Do you understand the question I've asked you?
Right. I think I do. If Ms. Lucet, or if an attorney writes a trust account check knowing that there are not funds in the account, at the time the check is written to cover the account, then that would be an intention to misappropriate, even though other funds came in.
Well, what, would there be an actual misappropriation in that case if the money was deposited before the check that had been written was actually?
No.
Okay.
No.
So then the intent, so that's where the, I'm having problems with the intent. I mean, so if the respondent's intent on issuing the check is to have money placed in her account before it's cashed, then it's really not her intention at that moment that she issues the check to misappropriate.
Agreed.
Okay. Okay.
Now, when the check was presented for payment, it invaded other clients' funds and created a shortage. That shortage remained, was not rectified, until Mr. Petrelli wrote a check to Ms. Lucid in the amount of $5,500 on February 3rd. Ms. Lucid received the check on February 3rd. Nevertheless, knowing that the trust account check to MS Services had, in all likelihood, been received by them 5 days earlier, and likely had already been deposited, she waited another 2 days before depositing Mr. Petrelli's check in her trust account on February 5th. This is the full week after she wrote the check, and a full week after the check was due, and 10 days after she issued the check.
Do we know why the delay of 2 days at that point?
I do not know why. Now, Respondent's counsel repeatedly characterized.
I hate to ask you another hypothetical, but I'm trying to wrap my head around all the permutations here. So, hypothetical: Lucid issues the check, does not expect the check to be cashed before she gets Petrelli's, and let's say Petrelli issues the check timely, and the mail carrier gives the check to the wrong residence. And therefore, the check is cashed and Petrelli's funds aren't there. Would you still consider that an intentional misappropriation?
I'm not sure I'm understanding your hypothetical, Your Honor.
Okay. So Ms. Lucid issues the check.
Right.
She doesn't have Petrelli's money in her account, but she's expecting it to arrive, and Petrelli actually timely sends the check, so that if it is timely delivered, it will be there before that check is cashed. But the mail carrier delivers the check to another residence, so it's not there, or to another place, which results in money from the trust account going down. Would you consider that to be a knowing misappropriation?
If she reasonably believed that the check would be received, deposited, and clear her trust account before the check that she wrote cleared the account, but the check did not arrive because of other circumstances, then in that case, no, it would not be an intentional misappropriation.
So under the facts here, is there a dispute as to whether, at the time as Lucid issued the check, she anticipated she would be repaid by Petrelli before that check was negotiated? Is that in dispute?
That's the argument being made by respondent, that she did not intend to knowingly misappropriate other clients' trust and escrow funds because she reasonably believed, or she believed, that Mr. Petrelli's check would come in, be deposited, and clear the account before. So Mr. Petrelli's money would be there.
So looking at this from the moment in time that the check was written, tell us why that wasn't a reasonable expectation on her part.
It wasn't a reasonable expectation, Your Honor, because respondent knew at the time that she wrote the check that it had to be received, that it would be received in 3 days or less. And at that time, she had not even asked her client to send her the settlement money. That goes back to when exactly she asked Mr. Petrolli to send her the money. We believe, as she stated in her letter, that she wrote the check. Let me go back. At the time that she wrote the check, she did not. I'm trying to think of a better way to say this. It wasn't reasonable. We don't believe it was reasonable to expect that Mr. Petrelli's check would come and be deposited in the Clearity account before the check from MS Services cleared the account. We don't believe that is reasonable because she had not even asked her client to send her the money. Even if she did ask her client to send her the money on January 26, 2016, it was unreasonable for her to believe at the time she wrote the check that Mr. Petrelli's check would come in, be deposited and clear her account before the check to MS Services cleared the account, because one, 5 days had already passed since she allegedly requested that Mr. Petrelli write the check, and the check still hadn't come in. Two, she had no idea whether Mr. Petrelli had even written the check, let alone mailed it. She had no idea when the check would be received. She had no idea when she'd be able to deposit the check, and she had no idea when that check would clear. So it was unreasonable under all of those circumstances for her to believe that all of this would happen in the next 3 days.
I believe you said this earlier. If you could just repeat. On January 26th, she writes the check. On what date does she ask Mr. Petrelli for the money?
According to her letter to the OAE, she wrote the check and then asked Mr. Petrelli to send the funds.
On what date was that? When did she ask Mr. Petrelli?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. In her statement, she says she wrote the check first and then asked her client.
So both on January 26th?
Yes, both on 26th. During the hearing, she changed her statement. Her statement was different. She says that she contacted her client on January 21st and told him to immediately send the funds. But whether or not it was on the 1st, the 21st, or the 26th, it was unreasonable for her to believe that the check would come in.
Why? Why would that be? If she had dealings with the client and on all other occasions, mm-hmm. he had promptly issued checks as he had promised.
Well, for the reasons that I stated before, if 5 days had already passed since she allegedly asked him for the money, and she still hadn't received it. And she didn't call him up. She didn't say, you know, where's the check? She just knew that she had not yet received it. And she had no idea whether or not he had even written the check, let alone mailed it. She didn't call him up and say, where's the check? I need the check. And so she had no idea when she was going to receive the check, when it would be deposited, when it would clear. And so under those circumstances, I would suggest that it wasn't unreasonable. It wasn't reasonable for her to believe.
Well, let's say it's not. I mean, I think she's conceding she was negligent.
Correct.
That would mean that she's unreasonable. But being acting unreasonably isn't acting knowingly.
No. If the court believes that she reasonably believed that she would receive this money before the check to MS Services cleared the account, then this court could find
that it was unreasonable, but not intentional. I mean,
not no.
There's a difference between the two. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to act unreasonably; it's another thing to act intentionally, right?
Well, I think that the two are related. If you're being unreasonable, then it's intentional.
Does it, Mr. Centenaro? I thought the issue was not the timing question, but that a check was written on a trust account that did not have the money it was written on at that moment. I thought that was the issue.
That is the issue.
So it doesn't really matter when she reasonably believed her client would send the money. It doesn't really matter when she reasonably believed or unreasonably believed the recipient would receive and deposit the money. All that matters is whatever money she expected to get hadn't cleared the trust account, and she wrote a check on that money that hadn't cleared the trust account. Is that the only real issue?
They're related, Your Honor.
Okay.
At the time she wrote the check, she didn't have Mr. Petrelli's funds. She knew she didn't have Mr. Petrelli's funds. But the issue is, and Respondent's counsel argue, that even though she didn't have the funds at the time that she wrote the check, she fully anticipated that the money would come in. And so that at the time it was presented, there would be her Mr. Petrelli's funds in the account.
My next question may deal more with something. I want to say punishment, but it's not really punishment. It may really deal with what to do with it, assuming everything you say is indeed correct. Does it matter at all that the funds we're talking about that were never received are client funds? Does it matter that the funds that were not yet received were funds to benefit a client in connection with a legal matter? Does any of that matter versus, in terms of the outcome, versus client monies that are used for a law office purpose or a personal purpose? Does it matter?
I don't believe it does matter, Your Honor, because to the individual, to the those individuals for whom an attorney is holding funds, it matters not to them whether the attorney used the funds for the attorney's own purpose or for the attorney's personal gain or for the benefit of another client. All that matters to them is that their money was used, their money was placed at risk without their permission. It doesn't matter why their money was placed at risk. It doesn't matter how great the risk was or how long the risk took. Client funds should never be placed at any risk for any purpose for any period of time.
Was the client ever, was any inquiry made by OAE of the client as to what occurred here?
Not that I'm aware of.
So if the client came forward and said, yeah, I knew I was supposed to send it earlier, I knew it was supposed to get there in time, I knew, I messed up, I'm sorry, would that matter?
Well, perhaps it would, Your Honor. It all goes to intent.
So would it not have been appropriate before reaching the conclusion of knowing misappropriation to find out what the client understood and what the attorney was relying on?
Mm. Well, regardless of what the client understood, the question is, what did the respondent intend at the time she wrote the check?
And that's why the second part of my question, what the client understood and what the attorney was relying upon. Would it not make sense to get that, a record of that, before reaching a conclusion about knowing misappropriation?
One thing, I don't think it would, Your Honor, because the relevant intent is the intent of the respondent, not the client.
Were there funds in her trust account that were to be allocated to her from an estate at the time that she issued this check?
Not at the time she issued the check. At the time she issued the check, she was holding a deposit of the individual who was intending to purchase her sister and her brother-in-law's home. So that was money that she was holding in escrow. That closing did not take place until after this check to MS Services was cashed. So at that time, then it became funds belonging to her sister and her brother-in-law that she was holding at their request. And it's in those funds that she had was expecting or had a colorable claim, because the intent was to use that money to purchase her mother's, respondent's mother's estate or home, which would make it part of the estate, and then she'd have an interest in that as a beneficiary of the estate. Respondent repeatedly in her brief characterizes her misconduct as an isolated mistake. It was not a mistake. Respondent intended to pay Mr. Petrelli's settlement from the trust account. She knew she was writing a trust account check. She knew that she did not have any funds on behalf of Mr. Petrelli. And she knew that she did not have the authority of the individuals for whom she was holding funds to use their money. But she did it anyway. So she intentionally, knowingly, and willingly, not mistakenly, advanced a payment of $5,500 on behalf of Mr. Petrelli.
How does expecting the money play into that? Because it was intentional from the beginning, but you've said if the money had come in, it would no longer be intentional. So how do you factor that in? Because that's out of her control. It's either intentional at all times, once she's write the check, or it's not if you're expecting the money to come in and something happens that creates the issue with the money not coming in. Because you've said that if she thought the money was going to come in, then it would not be intentional.
If she reasonably believed the money was coming.
Well, reasonableness has many definitions.
She believed and therefore intended.
If for example, in this case, the client had always paid the money on time. Mm-hmm. As I understand, it was a snowstorm which created some problems. So why would not be reasonable? Why would not that not be reasonable so that it's not intentional? Because she reasonably believed the money would come in except for these outside issues.
Well, I don't believe it was reasonable because of the reasons that I stated.
Which is what?
Which is that she supposedly asked her client to send her the money 5 days earlier and she still didn't have it. And she didn't follow up on that. She didn't call the client and say, where's the money? She just assumed that, and I would argue unreasonably so, that that check would come in.
Eventually it came in, though, did it not?
It did come in, but it wasn't reasonable at the time that she issued the check to believe that it would come in time or
what, before the check. What would be the time frame for reasonableness? 3 days, 2 days, 4 days?
I'm sorry?
You said that at 5 days it was unreasonable for her to expect the money to come in. Obviously, you wouldn't get it on the first day you asked for it. So what would be a reasonable, how many days would it be it still be reasonable?
Yeah, I don't think there's any magic number of how many days before it's reasonable. That's only one factor of many in determining whether or not it was reasonable.
But what other factors are here other than that?
Once again, the fact that she had no idea whether her client had even written the check. Yes, she asked her client to send her the check, but she had no idea whether he had actually done so. She had no idea whether he mailed it. She didn't know when she was going to receive the check. She may have hoped that it would come in, but that wasn't reasonable. It wasn't reasonable since she did not know when the check would be deposited or when the check would be cashed. Those are lots of unknowns that I would argue
she didn't know that from day one.
For her to believe that.
She didn't know that from day one, but at day one, based on what you've told us, it would be reasonable to expect it's coming in. Because she didn't know whether he had written it or not on day one. She didn't know if he had mailed it or not on day one.
Right, but
perhaps on day two. So when does it become unreasonable? What day?
Day one is not the relevant time frame. The relevant time frame is when she wrote the check, which was not on day one. It was 5 days later on January 26th.
Do we give any weight to her self-reporting this?
No, Your Honor. And the reason is that it's true that respondent highlighted the misappropriation in her letter to the OAE on October 5th, 2017. But that letter was in response to a letter by the OAE regarding an audit of her attorney trust account. And it was in response to a request for record-keeping records, including client ledger sheets, from January 1st, 2016 to the then-present time. So respondent was required to provide a fulsome response. She was required to provide complete records. And included in those records was the client ledger for John Petrelli, which clearly showed a negative balance due to the writing of a check, a trust account check, against non-existent funds. So regardless of whether respondent had reported or highlighted the misappropriation to us, we were going to find it. Just as we did her use of the attorney trust account to pay the debts of her client, Luann Jones, before receiving funds from Ms. Jones for that purpose.
You've been very clear, and we understand your position, that this is a knowing misappropriation which should call for disbarment. I'm not asking you to move off that position. Mm-hmm. If, however, the court were to find that this was a negligent misappropriation, what would the appropriate discipline be?
If it were negligent misappropriation, considering all the facts and circumstances, a discipline in the range of a censure to a short suspension, I think, would be appropriate.
Thank
you. Now, just give me a second. Respondent's counsel argues that the DRB's interpretation of Wilson's use of the term knowing misappropriation fails to distinguish between mere awareness of a fact and an intention to misappropriate client funds. Although Ms. Lucid was aware that Mr. Petrelli did not have funds in the account, she did not know that writing the check was wrongful. A similar argument was made by the Association of Professional Responsibility Lawyers. They argue that Wilson only applies to instances of intentional misappropriation, and an attorney cannot intentionally misappropriate unless the attorney knows that what the attorney is doing is wrong. The respondent's counsel and April conflate knowing and intentional misappropriation with misappropriation of client funds, knowing that the use of those funds is not permitted and intending to do so anyway. Those are two different things. Wilson requires intentional misappropriation. It does not require that the attorney know that what the attorney was doing was wrong. An ignorance of the law exception was suggested by Justice Stein in the concurrence in Ray Konopka, but the majority rightly rejected that and stated that no more radical exception to the Wilson could be designed. And that's because of their understanding that such an exception would allow any attorney who knowingly misappropriates to escape disbarment merely by alleging ignorance. The Office of Attorney Ethics could not prove that an attorney engaged in wrongdoing if the attorney did not know that what the attorney was doing was wrong. And it would be difficult, if not impossible, for the OAE to prove to the clear and convincing evidence standard that an attorney did know that what the attorney was doing was wrong. An ignorance of the law exception would do serious harm to the public and to the bar because it would incentivize ignorance. Ignorance of the record-keeping rules and related to case law. Because such ignorance would allow the attorney to escape disbarment for knowing misappropriation. I would suggest, Your Honor, that should this court find knowing misappropriation, as we believe, that the only appropriate sanction under relevant case law would be disbarment.
Thank you, Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Ringler, is Ms. Lucid behind you? Is Ms. Lucid
yes,
with you there?
Chief Justice.
She will have the opportunity, as I know you know, to address the court if she would like after you speak.
She would like to take advantage of that opportunity at the conclusion of my presentation and response.
Yes, I think you put that in your note. Please go ahead.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Rabner, Associate Justices. A lawyer's career should not turn on the pace of the United States Postal Service. This court has repeatedly demonstrated its ability to discern when an attorney makes a mistake that constitutes misconduct but negligent misappropriation of funds entrusted to him or her, and to differentiate that conduct from when an attorney acts with the requisite specific intent to knowingly deprive another of funds to which the attorney knows he is not entitled. Only in the latter case is the rigid per se Wilson rule applicable. The authorities and precedents are robust that a mere mistake creating a risk of technical misappropriation is insufficient to impose the harsh, unforgiving per se disbarment rule. Cases like Noonan, who got 3 months suspension, or Comet, who was censured, or Arekia, who received a reprimand, are most like the facts in our case today. The DRB opinions below and the concerns advanced in the amicus briefs make clear that members of the bar are uncertain about whether a simple, isolated, dumb error, a momentary lapse in appreciating the risk created without the actual intent to knowingly or wrongfully invade funds held in trust, could encompass within the Wilson's automatic disbarment net a larger swath of lawyers beyond those who commit the types of dishonest conduct described in Wilson and its progeny. In the process, there would likely be a disproportionate impact on small firm and solo practitioners less adept at trust account management. Those concerns are ill-founded if the court is faithful to its own precedents and exercises its customary wisdom in determining that Carina Lucid lacked the necessary knowing intent to deprive others of funds entrusted to her, unlike the respondents in Wilson itself, Fleischer, Brown, Skevin, and Spina, to cite a few examples of much more egregious conduct meriting disbarment under Wilson. Ms. Lucid, by all accounts, is an upright, honest, dedicated attorney with a highly developed personal and professional integrity. She has an unblemished record. The entirety of her professional misconduct charge is that she erred by writing a check, a single check, in payment of a client's matter and sending it off to California in the aftermath of a blizzard, expecting to receive her client's check from right here in New Jersey before the check sent to California would clear her account. She miscalculated. The California creditor received and immediately electronically deposited the check on Friday, January 29th, 2016. But Mr. Petrelli's check, mailed in New Jersey, reached her for a deposit approximately 5 business days after that. With respect to the director, he was not the presenter or arguer before the disciplinary review board, and the chronology and the facts have been established by the testimony, the sworn testimony below. On January 21st, 2016, Ms. Lucid settled the Petrelli case. On the same day, she informed her client, and he agreed to send her the funds, the $5,500, to resolve the matter. On the 26th, in the aftermath of the blizzard and the loss of power, she went into the office where she found a letter from the creditor saying MS Services LLC that the deal was off unless the check was received by the end of that week. She confirmed with her client that he was sending the funds, and she wrongfully wrote the check at that moment, expecting to receive it. Ms. Lucid never intended to create the approximately 5-day temporary shortfall in her trust account. She never even focused on that risk. Indeed, until she undertook a self-audit a year and a half later, she had assumed that Petrelli's monies had been deposited before the MMS services check had been negotiated. She only realized then that she had acted carelessly, thoughtlessly, without appreciating the risk resulting from the timing of her actions on behalf of Mr. Petrelli. Throughout her career as a judicial law clerk, both at the federal and state levels, appellate division and bankruptcy, so never a trial situation. In her years as a big firm associate until her daughter was born, and then as a solo practitioner receiving a flat fee typically for her services, she had virtually no experience with trust accounting or attorney trust account management. The first 5 years she ran her firm, her IOLTA account was what's called a low balance account because there was so little money being deposited or being run through it. Despite this lack of experience, she has consistently accepted full responsibility for the fact that she made a mistake when she issued that check before she received the funds from the client on whose behalf she issued it. She undoubtedly should have known better. But in fact, at that moment, she did not appreciate the potential impact of her act in sending off the check for Petrelli before she got the check from him. The chronology does not establish a knowing intent to invade funds over which she had no authority, but rather a momentary carelessness, lapse in judgment. It does not involve a lapping scenario present in other cases where she was trying to avoid a shortfall by borrowing money from one client to take care of another. It's not a situation where she didn't have enough money to meet obligations to clients or others. Here, there is no evidence that she intended to borrow from Peter to pay Paul. She did not appreciate, though she agrees that she should have, that the timing created a risk, not even a certainty, had the mail been a little different, but it created a risk that she didn't appreciate at the time she wrote the check, and that she was potentially creating a risk of invading other clients or other stakeholders' money in her trust account. Her sworn testimony at the hearing before the District Ethics Committee and her contemporaneous comments are proof that she did not, an uncontroverted true proof. Only Ms. Lucid, I say respectfully, knew and knows today what was in her mind at that time. She did not intend to take monies knowing they did not belong to her. Her actions lack the intentionality and the scienter required to constitute a knowing misappropriation. She negligently failed to realize that by not waiting a few days for her client's check before writing a check on his behalf, she was risking a technical, temporary shortfall. The Office of Attorney Ethics has conflated the act of writing a check, intentionally writing a check, with the necessary and critical intent to wrongfully invade funds, with knowledge that the funds were not hers to use. There's no doubt she had the general intent to write the check, but not the necessary specific intent to import the mens rea terms. Her state of mind was a rushed decision to preserve Petrelli's settlement without thinking of its possible consequences or implications. She committed a mistake in judgment in unique circumstances as a practitioner with limited experience in handling trust funds. It was an oversight on her part during an historic blizzard. While despite a family medical emergency and lost power, she acted zealously to protect a client. In that unusual, not likely to recur situation, she lost sight of the implications of writing her check before receiving her her client's check, rather than vice versa.
Statement you made before, she intended to write a check, but she didn't intend there to be a shortfall. When she wrote the check, she intended to write the check. She also knew that there wasn't enough money in it to cover it. So she knew there would be a shortfall. It's not a mistake, it's not an error. At the time she wrote the check, she knew she intended to write the check, that's for certain. And she knew that there would not be enough funds in there to cover it.
With respect, Justice Fernandez-Villa, she knew she was writing the check. She knew she needed to get funds from Mr. Petrelli in order to put them in her account. But her thinking was fuzzy. She was not focused on the implications of what writing that check might do. Of course, it might not have happened at all if the...
Well, it may not, but nonetheless, when she wrote the check, she intended to write the check, and she knew that there weren't sufficient funds in the account, trust account, to cover that check.
She knew correct? Whose money she had in her account.
She knew there weren't enough funds. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
But she did not knowingly invade the other client's money. It never occurred to her.
Where did she think the money was coming from if it wasn't from the other accounts?
First, per her testimony, she expected to have Petrelli's money in the account.
But at the time she wrote it, the money wasn't in there.
You are correct.
She knew it had to come from somewhere. Where could it come from other than the client's accounts?
I'm sorry.
Where could it come from other than other clients' accounts? I know she expected the money to be in, but the moment she wrote it, there weren't sufficient funds, and she had to know it had to come from other accounts because the bank wasn't going to put it in there.
We are in accord that she should have known that, but she wasn't thinking. She wasn't thinking in a sophisticated, professional manner at that moment of time.
She wasn't thinking professionally?
At that moment when she wrote the check, and her testimony...
That's just my question. Is that the argument you're making?
That's part of our argument, yes. We have never disputed that she made an error in not waiting to be sure she had that money in hand. And these 4 years plus of being under the disciplinary spotlight were certainly not worth prematurely writing a $5,500 check for Mr. Petrelli, who was a good client and had always paid his bills and agreed to send that money. In her mind, erroneously, she thought, well, if something happens to Mr. Petrelli and he never sends the money, well, I'll just pay the $5,500 myself. I have money in my operating account. I can do that. Had she thought it through more carefully, had she not been exhausted and trying to manage a family and her husband's injury and so on, let's assume she would have thought more carefully at that moment. But when she wrote the check, she was not thinking along those lines.
I take it your position is, from what you just said, that her expectation was that when the check was presented for payment, the check she wrote, that it would then be drawn on funds from the client, Mr. Petrelli.
You are correct, Justice Solomon.
And that's where you were getting at. She wrote the check, but not believing it would invade, when it was presented for payment, any other client funds.
Yes, and further, the concept, which seems very obvious and self-evident to many and hopefully most practitioners, that if you write a check and the money is, if what happened happens, you're de facto taking the money from other clients. Not everyone realizes that.
Can I ask you a question? Let's assume for a minute, Mr. Centenaro makes the argument that this was, regardless of the nature of the transaction here or whose money was drawn on whose money, at least technically, this is a knowing misappropriation because when she wrote the check, the client's money was not in the account.
Well,
so that's knowing that at the time the check is written, check's mailed off, at that moment, it is a knowing misappropriation.
Well, as predicted, we take issue with that.
Let's assume for a minute that technically is under Wilson and the countless cases decided under it, that is technically a knowing misappropriation.
Respectfully to you, Justice Solomon,
I'm asking you to concede. I'm not asking you to concede. I'm just saying assume for the moment. And we have to make a distinction between those kinds of violations that warrant disbarment and those knowing misappropriations, if this is concluded to be one, that do not require disbarment. What should the distinction be?
First, there are a host of cases already decided and found to be negligent. And I'm not avoiding your question. I understand I will have to answer it directly. But there are many, many cases in which an attorney knew what he was doing when he wrote a check to himself or when he took legal fees out of the trust account or when he paid zero attention to what was in there and paid his personal taxes or lived a lavish lifestyle. Many of those cases, the lawyers, there's a difference between knowing what you're doing, the actus reus, and the mental state. And many, many times this court has, I would say with compassion and mercy, but also with a defensible intellectual line in the sand, said, if an attorney is so careless that he wasn't intending to take the money, he wasn't intending to deprive anybody else. He clearly intended to take the money, he took it. But he wasn't intending to deprive anybody else. He didn't realize he didn't have enough money in there. He forgot he already took his fee, he took it again. He knew what he was doing when he did those acts. But there wasn't the specific intention to say, oh, I don't have enough money. It only belongs to these other clients. I'm taking it anyway.
That sounds, that almost sounds like the Jacobs defense. But of course, you're not placing it in that context where you're dealing with maybe the mental inability to appreciate the wrongness of one's act. You're couching it in the context of the more typical mitigating circumstances that Wilson talks about, are you not?
You are correct, Justice LaVecchia. And returning to Justice Solomon's question, or where do you draw the line, if you were to conclude that this is an act of knowing misappropriation as opposed to misappropriation, there was a five-day shortfall she did not expect. We strongly argue that that's a negligent act of misappropriation, and therefore all the mitigation, such as self-reporting, lack of experience, what was going on in the world at that moment, all of that becomes relevant, her general outstanding character for honesty. If it's negligent, you may consider, under your precedence, mitigating circumstances.
Your position is knowing issuance of the check at a time when there isn't sufficient funds doesn't become a misappropriation until that check is cashed.
Yes.
And if during that intervening period, like Petrelli's check had arrived and had been cashed, we wouldn't be here today.
That's certainly true.
Can we get into the weeds on that just for a brief moment? Mm-hmm. What kind of check was this that Petrelli sent? I mean, personal or regular commercial checks, still over $5,000, don't clear as soon as they're deposited in banks. We all know that. They're held for a period of time. So how reasonable is it to think that a $5,500 check, the minute it's received, is going to become available in an account?
Well, that is not the scenario here, respectfully.
I know, but if we're going to get into this, when does someone know they actually have the client's monies?
Well,
I'm interested in your position on that.
Was it reasonable to think that the post office would send a letter from New Jersey to California quickly, and that the recipient had the means to electronically deposit it before 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon? The likelihood was no. But
if we're going to be cutting it so closely in terms of days, I mean, are you concerned about the law moving to a direction where if funds by a client are not electronically transferred, then there can't be an expectation that funds are actually in the attorney's trust account?
That is why we are taking alternative positions. First, as I'm sure you understand, we believe that Carina Lucid acted negligently, not intentionally. Mm-hmm. But secondly, if you do find that it was a knowing and intentional effort to invade money she knew she didn't have a right to utilize, then somehow Wilson should permit a different result than the disproportionate, draconian result of permanent disbarment. If an attorney acts wrongfully but stupidly, the bar is fearful that many, many practitioners will be vulnerable to disbarment, not discipline, but disbarment under the Wilson rule. So either that language in the Wilson decision itself that says almost invariably, not invariably, disbarment is the result, perhaps the court would want to focus on that language and some later language. In fact, it has the determinant has been when the court finds venality, self-dealing, greed, intentional acts, I know that money's not mine to use, but I'm going to use it because I have a shortfall or my family member's sick. When an attorney knowingly breaches trust, that attorney warrants a very harsh sanction and disbarment. We're not quibbling that disbarment is appropriate in that circumstances. But that's not our facts here. Not only the context, but the general character of the practitioner, the fact there was no self-dealing whatsoever, the fact that by a mere fate of the bank and postal service gods, the timing was wrong. She accepts responsibility for not realizing she should have waited, or she could have used her business account or her personal account. All of that might have been risky, but it wouldn't have resulted in her facing disciplinary charges. Where can the court draw the line? It gets thinner and thinner as to who falls over and whose career is over because of a mistake in judgment. We are human beings, and human beings, present company excepted, of course, make the occasional error. And in this case, she has demonstrated repeatedly her basic honesty and her commitment to honest behavior. She self-reported this. The argument that it might eventually have been discovered, well, okay, maybe it might have eventually been discovered, but she took the initiative and brought it forward to the Office of Attorney Ethics. She also forthrightly rejected the OAE investigator's suggestion that she had made a different kind of mistake, that the mistake she made was paying out of her trust account when she meant to pay out of her business account. If she had said, oh yes, that's what I did, she wouldn't have been charged with this. That's a simple mistake. But she honestly said, no, I knew I was using the trust account. I was just an idiot. I didn't focus on the fact that I shouldn't have done that. And I never realized until 18 months later, when I was being audited because of bank fees triggered an audit unrelated to any of Mr. Petrelli's matter. When I didn't realize this whole time, I assumed Petrelli's money was deposited before the California check was negotiated. The Wilson rule is not designed to impact this type of limited, short-sighted, but honest misconduct, to curtail a legal career over one undetected, unsophisticated failure to appreciate the possibility of a risk potentially occurring from the premature issuance of the single trust check for Mr. Petrelli. Her error warrants a proportionate and fair sanction, serving the purpose of attorney discipline to protect the public and to preserve public confidence in the profession. The decisions below all explicitly state that Ms. Lucid is no threat to the public, and public confidence in the profession would not be shaken if she were not disbarred. Sorry for all the negatives there. But public confidence in the profession does not require that the response, the judicial response, the oversight response to this type of mistake be so disproportionately harsh.
Tell us the sanction you would recommend.
The sanction we recommend is in keeping with what the three-member hearing panel.
Ms. Ringler, I think you were wrapping up, it sounded like.
Yes, Chief Justice, I am. Wilson is meant to address attorneys putting their own pecuniary interest ahead of their fiduciary duties, not to impose the ultimate sanction for an honest, careless mistake. If this court were to find that this case, that these facts fall within the ambit of Wilson's mandatory disbarment rule, then that result suggests that Wilson needs to be modified to exclude the type of unself-interested, non-venal acts that the Kanopka concurrence imagined and described. Lawyers who make an honest mistake through carelessness or just being human and violate the rules through a lapse, ignorance, or an oversight should not fear permanent loss of their ability to practice law when the mistake is an isolated, one-time, momentary lapse in extraordinary circumstances unlikely to recur without any evidence whatsoever of self-interest, gain, intent to deprive, or even the knowledge that trust funds may be invaded. That attorney should be sanctioned, but not be vulnerable to disbarment pursuant to Wilson. We respectfully ask this court to remain true to the numerous precedents involving negligent misappropriation and find that Karina Lucid's solitary negligent act, stemming from her miscalculation and erroneous assumption that Mr. Petrelli's money would be in her account, merits a reprimand or a censure, as both the District Ethics Committee unanimously decided and Disciplinary Review Board member Singer concluded. Thank you for your attention and consideration. If there are no further questions for me, Ms. Lucid would like to address the court briefly.
Thank you, Ms. Ringler. Ms. Lucid.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I am humbled to be before this esteemed court in any capacity, but regret that it is under this current circumstance. And I thank you for this opportunity to address the court with regard to my professional future and the impact that this act, that was truly a mistake and a lapse of judgment on my part, could have on my career and my professional life. I acknowledge that I made a big mistake, and for that mistake, I am truly deeply sorry. Honestly, 18 months after I made that mistake, when I first realized that the mistake had been made, I was so truly contrite and sincerely remorseful that I wrote a letter to the Office of Attorney Ethics to apologize for that mistake and to assure them that I would take measures to make certain that such a mistake never happened again in my office. I made a huge mistake, but I did not intend to steal from any client or to borrow with the intent to pay back. I apologize. I made that mistake without appreciating and sincerely without any appreciation for the risk that I was creating. I just wasn't thinking. I did not intend to invade client trust funds, and I never thought that there would be a shortfall in the account or that such a possibility would constitute an unauthorized, albeit very temporary, borrowing of client funds at all. What I did was an action resulting from a lapse in judgment and the failure to understand the potential impact of not waiting until Mr. Petrelli's funds were not only in my hands, but in my trust account in cleared funds. If I had paused to think clearly about it, I would have waited. I would have thought of alternative solutions rather than just closing out the settlement deal right then and there. Looking back, I was in the office for a brief window, trying to make sure that there weren't any fires to put out since I had been out of the office unexpectedly due to a blizzard. My husband had injured himself pretty seriously with a snowblower, and my daughter was still home from school, and she was little at the time. I was stressed and too busy, and I acted in haste. I know that if I had stopped and thought clearly about it, I would have done the mental math. I would have handled it differently. I would have written a check from my operating account and just had my client reimburse me there. Frankly, in my mind, that was always what I was doing. The only reason I wrote a check from the trust account was because I had already told him several days before to write a check to my trust account. And when I called him to confirm that he had sent the check, I knew he was sending a check made out to my trust account. I didn't stop to think that I could deposit his check into my trust account and then simply reimburse myself by writing a check from my trust account to my operating account to cover the check that I had written from my operating account to negotiate the settlement. It was mental calisthenics that my stressed out brain simply did not engage in at that moment. I acknowledge that I wrote the check. I wrote the check from my trust account, expecting the money from Petrelli to be forthcoming into my trust account. But I absolutely deny that I intentionally took anyone else's money, any funds entrusted to me, purposefully and in order to preserve another client's settlement. That was not my intention, and that is not what I had thought I was doing. I did not intentionally take money that I knew I was not entitled to. I was not experienced at using trust funds or working in my trust account. I should have made it my business to learn that before I even opened a trust account. And I realized that, and I am deeply sorry that I did not do that. But the act of writing that check was not accompanied by an intent to take trust funds from another client or any other act of moral turpitude or venality. It simply, truthfully, never occurred to me. I am before this court today, humiliated both personally and professionally. There is not a day that has gone by since September 2017 when I discovered this mistake that it does not weigh on me. I have gone to great lengths since becoming aware of and appreciating the error that I made to make sure that nothing like this ever happens in my office again. The first thing I did was to find a New Jersey approved CLE class to learn proper trust accounting procedures. The second thing I did was to acknowledge and apologize for the mistake. The third thing I did was to have a serious heart-to-heart with my accountant, which did result in me letting him go and hiring a new accountant because he did not appreciate the seriousness of the situation and he was candid about the fact that he had no interest in learning. I appreciate that he was so honest with me, and I was able to find someone who does understand law firm accounting necessities. And I have also since found a phenomenal bookkeeper who specializes in law firm bookkeeping. I spent a tremendous amount of time researching practice management software and ultimately chose a system that has specific safeguards and is compliant with New Jersey trust accounting regulations. I can't even quantify the number of hours that I spent writing up policies and procedures for the firm so that everyone that works for me at my office knows how we do things and why. The problem is when I made this mistake, the problem was that I did not know how to do things properly or why. So as I learned them, I made sure to put it down on paper so that we would all know and follow the rules properly. I did not take this lightly, and I do not take this lightly. I acknowledge the mistake that I made, and I can tell you with great seriousness that I have appreciated the significance of my action and made certain that there are safeguards in place at my firm and that everyone knows so that nothing like this will occur again. I acknowledge and I recognize that I should have made it my business to learn how to properly operate within my trust account, and I am not making excuses for myself. However, the underlying and core truth is that I did not consciously violate trust accounting rules or consciously or intentionally invade client trust funds. As I said before, I am humiliated by the situation that I put myself in, both personally and professionally. over the course of my life, I have taken great pride in being a person of integrity, honor, and virtue. My staff often even teases me about how over the top I am with making sure that we all act with integrity in everything that our firm does, because that's my commitment to our clients and the people that I work with. Our professional integrity is of paramount importance to all of us. And by all of us, I mean every person that works for me at my office. And I only hire people who sign on to that creed, because I do truly understand how important it is. I do my best to behave the same way in my personal life. I have volunteered many times over the years for my daughter's school activities to help teach kids to act with integrity and honor, like when we did a Model UN program, which I introduced to her school and ran for them as an after-school activity. I've been a reader and Eucharistic minister at my church for many years, and I taught faith formation for many years prior to that. And I mention this only to give examples of how, both in my personal and professional life, it truly is important to me to practice what I preach. And I make every effort to be an example of honesty and integrity in my community, my family, and, as I mentioned before, to my staff. When I stop to think how absurd it was for me not to be more careful and to have put myself in a situation where I now stand with people of moral turpitude and venality and unrehabilitatable character, it turns my stomach. Not a day goes by that I am not conscious of this mistake and conscious of my determination to make sure it never happens again. I have cried so many times, and I have no one but myself to blame. In sum, I just want this esteemed court to know that I am sorry, and that at no point in time did I ever intend to invade client trust funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lucid. Thank you, counsel. Take the matter under advisement.